In an ever-changing world, Off Hollywood Media presents a voice of truth and inspiration, resonating a vibration of love and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions, as we, as one, strive for higher and higher levels of consciousness, always remembering life changes. And now, your host, our MC, our master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Thank you for that introduction. This is an exciting show. This is our one-year anniversary. Actually, according to some people, last week was our one-year anniversary, and that this week is the first show of the new year. Even though we started our first show on April 6th, which is technically tomorrow, a year ago. So either way you slice it, this is a really special show. And it's also a special show because we have a friend of mine on, Molly Windle. And Molly is a job whisperer. That is such a great title. I can't wait to talk to her more about that. She's also an author and president and CEO of an executive network group. And want to talk to her about that as well. And so much more. But before we bring her on, you know, it's interesting. I got some great emails from a lot of people saying things like, what happened to your diet? Because last week I didn't mention it. So people wanted to know if I fell off the wagon or if I was still using that product, U.S. Aloe. And the funny thing is well, last week was a special show because that was like our last show of last year kind of thing. So we were celebrating and we were shooting video in a new location. And so in that location, everything was a little bit different, and we also had a lot more people there than normal. And as you heard on the show, not only was Barnett Bain there, but so was Norman Seeff and several other people. So there was a lot going on. And so I forgot to say a lot of things, and actually I ran out of time because we talked about so much and there was so much going on. So no, I didn't fall off the wagon last week. As a matter of fact, if you're keeping track, I lost 2 pounds. And I have to say, yes, I have lost weight a lot faster than that before. But without exercising and without really dieting, all I did was really take the product. I still lost the 2 pounds. And the good thing was is that it feels like I'm not just losing water weight, that I'm actually must be losing fat, because I actually feel like I'm toner. So I don't know if it's the muscle starting to come through or if the aloe is actually helping with muscle tone, even though I'm not exercising. So there's something to look at. So there it is. So yes, I'm still doing the product until a couple days ago, because I just came to visit my mom during the Easter holiday, and my mom is an amazing, excellent, delicious Italian cook. So if you want to call that falling off the wagon, no, actually, I jumped off, happily so, into my mother's pot, and I've been eating everything that she's made. So I'm not even going to tell you how much I lost this week or how much I gained, because I don't care. So there's that. But come next week, I'll be back on the U.S. Aloe product, and you can find out more about it by going to our website at lifechanges.ws. So, you know, it's interesting because this week's guest, Molly Windle, ties into a story wherein, when you see, a couple of months ago, I was invited to speak at an event. And the event, ironically, was at a comedy club, and after I was asked to speak, I said, you know, I'm not a comedian. And they said, oh, no, you're going to be the serious speaker, and then we're going to have a comedian afterwards, because it was at the comedy club. But it was a fundraiser, and I was being asked to speak as host of Life Changes with Filippo. And so I asked them what they wanted me to talk about, and they said, talk about what you talk about on the show. And I thought that was interesting, and I asked them why. This was a fundraiser for something, a natural health something or other, clinics of some sort. And they said, because you have a way of talking about these things that people normally don't talk about or don't admit to talking about, and better than that, don't really understand. And I thought it was really interesting. And how I ended up starting the talk was talking about me being just like them a few years back, a few years ago. And here I am, as all of you have seen me, with long hair, and I dress, I usually wear a jacket when I'm speaking in public, but it's casual. It's not three-piece suit, and it's not a tie, and I always have my shirt open, and so I'm casual, and I've got the long hair, of course, and so people don't see me as a corporate guy or a guy that even knows anything about the business world, which I think is pretty funny. But in any event, since we're not supposed to be judging books by covers, but we do that all the time. And so I stood up there after I was introduced, and I stood on stage, and I said, you know, a few years back, I used to be just like you. Because here they were coming to donate to something that was, again, holistic and natural health and that kind of thing. But a lot of people don't really know too much about that either. But they were all well-meaning, and they were there in their suits and ties and beautiful dresses, supporting something that they didn't necessarily understand but thought that was a good thing. And I said, I used to be a lot like you. Believe it or not, I used to wear a suit to work every day. And everybody started to laugh. Well, wasn't supposed to be the comedian, but for some reason they think that's funny. And maybe they just weren't believing me. And so I went on to tell them that I used to work for IBM. And then they laughed some more. I don't know if it was the way I was saying it or just what I was saying or just to look at me. They weren't buying it. And the more I got into the story, the more they realized I was serious and that I did not believe in any of this or know anything about holistic healing or know anything about psychics or the shift or 2012 or any of these things that we talk about on the show. I was an IBMer. I was in the corporate world. I was told what to do, and I did it, and I didn't question, at least at the beginning of my career there. And I was just following what my mom and dad thought I should have been doing, and I was working my butt off and doing really well for and making a lot of money for the corporation and moving up the ranks. And somebody came along one day, and when I started complaining about or started realizing that something was wrong, I had always had interest in speaking to people and singing for people and entertaining people. And I actually, ironically, did a lot of that at IBM. I'd entertain at a lot of the meetings and speak a lot of at the events and blah, blah, blah. But the core of what I did was corporate work. And talked to a friend of mine at the time and was telling her a little bit about my woes, that I didn't feel that I was cut out for this. And she said, almost in a whisper, ironically, because we didn't really want anybody around to hear, she said, you should go see a clairvoyant. And I said, a what? And she said, a clairvoyant. And I said, is she like a psychic or something? And she said, well, kind of, sort of. And I said, I don't think I'm into that. And she says, no, you really should go. So here was a colleague of mine that I respected telling me I should go see this psychic kind of lady. And I listened to her, and I went. And I thought, that's really interesting. And when I got back, I was shy about telling people what I went and did because I knew people would laugh, and they did. But I told them anyway, and I realized that the way I told them made it as interesting, made it interesting enough to them for other people to want to go too. And all of a sudden, it wasn't like this big woo-woo thing. It was like, oh, really? And I started learning more about this stuff, and there's a science to some of it, and there's deep, I mean, this stuff goes deep. And as I was sharing this with this audience a couple months ago, people came up afterwards and said, thank you for sharing that story. That really bridges for us where we are and maybe where we're headed. And as I've reflected on this in the past several months, we've always talked about Life Changes with Filippo being just that, a bridge between what our normal life and maybe where we're headed in our thinking, maybe something a little bit more out there, maybe something that we don't want to believe in or want to believe in, but we just don't know how to bridge it. And that's what Life Change is all about. And so this is interesting because this show today is definitely a bridge. And the person that I'm talking about, who talked to me originally about going to that clairvoyant, is our guest today, who used to work for IBM just like I did. And her name is Molly Wendell. And the reason this show is such a bridge is because today, in real time, people are having such a hard time finding jobs. This is a completely different market. And there are many people out there, just like I was, who was in a job that wasn't right for them for various reasons. And people out there that are looking for different jobs. And though that's not woo-woo, and that's not weird, that is happening today. And so here we are with Life Changes with Filippo, looking to bridge the gap, yet again, in a different way, for people who are out there looking for jobs. And lo and behold, Molly and I have been in touch over the years, thankfully through the holiday greeting cards and notes that we send back and forth and that kind of thing, that when I saw that Molly had written a book, I thought, this is perfect for our show. And I'm so glad she was available. And the book is The New Job Search, Break All the Rules, Get Connected, and Get Hired Faster for the Money You're Worth. So this job whisperer, Molly Wendell, who's also an author, listen to this, was once out of work for 2 years and 3 days. And then she changed her job search approach and had more than 30 job offers in 90 days. Since then, Molly has helped thousands of people land jobs. She's currently president of and CEO of Executive Network, a networking group exclusively for executives. Now, she also holds an MBA from the University of California, Irvine, and a BS in marketing from San Diego State University. And she used to be an IBMer and since then has done so many other things. But who better to talk about the new job search and help us bridge the gap to actually getting the jobs that we're here to get? But Molly Wendell. Molly, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Filippo, so much. I'm thrilled to be here. Hey, I have to mention something. Back when you were at IBM, I don't think you needed to lose weight. So what happened?
That's a really good question.
You were so skinny. You were. Oh, I think you needed to gain weight.
You know, that is so funny. You know, that's a really good question. Well, I'll have to think about that one because I don't know. I was so stressed at IBM.
That might have been the thing.
Yeah, and plus, you know how we ran a lot around a lot so much, and I was keeping up an image, and though I'm happier now, so much happier, there's no comparison. Somehow that aspect of me, I don't know. You'd think I don't know. I'll think about that one. I'll think about it.
But, I just thought that was funny. But let's talk about the book, and let's talk about the job search and the challenges that people are having.
You mentioned IBM, and you know, you said to me something really interesting that about the time that I was looking for something else, you were talking to me about this stuff that many years ago. Remember when you said that over the phone recently?
I do, and it's so strange. It's interesting because I remember the day you came to me and said, "I'm not sure I'm happy," and I remember saying, "You've got to leave. You have to go find your passion. You have to go do what you want to do." And so I think essentially you were my first, quote, client. Maybe that's because I remember it very vividly, actually. And it was so many years ago. So it's interesting the persona that people give out when you can tell they're in the wrong place or they're looking in the wrong place. There's oftentimes people who are heading down the same path that they've always been in because they think that that's where they're supposed to go. And And you might see them and listen to their story and say, wait, hold on. Have you ever thought about, and give them another angle or a completely new path? And sometimes they just light up and say, no, I haven't, but that sounds really exciting, much more interesting than what I've been doing before. And you think, boy, well, go do it then, you know? It's sometimes it's tough to see internally because you know yourself too much.
The interesting thing is, too, while you were at IBM, Molly, you were such a shining light, and you were so different from everybody else. You didn't see things like everybody else saw things. And so it's no coincidence that you've written a book to help people see the job market and the job search process differently than we've been looking at it all this time. And you say, break all the rules. And I love this because there are things that people do that we think we're supposed to do, and you're saying these are the five things you really shouldn't be focusing on. Like, number one, don't focus on your resume. Can you talk to me about these things? What do you mean?
Yes. You know, nobody cares about your resume. I think here's the challenge. When you find yourself in a job search, most people think, okay, here's what I need to do. I need to get my resume ready. I need to get online and see who's hiring. I need to waste a lot of time in front of the computer. I need to tell everybody I know that I'm in a job search. And I'm here to tell you right now that no, you know, don't do that. Because, first of all, the job boards, the unadvertised, there's so many more unadvertised jobs out there than there are advertised jobs. So if you're out looking online for a job, you're one of the many hundreds of thousands of people who are doing the same, and your competition is much greater that way. Secondly, if you make every conversation about a job, every time you hit up a friend or an acquaintance, yes, I'm in the job search, you become kind of draining. And I have to admit that I learned this lesson from personal experience. For the first year, you know, I was in the job search for 2 years and 3 days. About a year and a half into the job search, I said, something's not right. I'm not getting the interviews. I'm not getting the offers. I don't have a job. And it wasn't like I wasn't looking every day. I was looking every single day. And I said, I have to change this up. I have to do something different. So I quit the job search. I quit sitting in front of the computer. I turned it off. I went out and I started meeting with people and connecting with people and learning about them. And that was when I decided, okay, this industry sounds interesting. Maybe I'll get into a new industry. I met with two people who then connected me with three more people each, who then connected me with more people and more people. And through those conversations, I asked a lot of questions. Instead of making it all about me, I made it all about them, kind of like the old Dale Carnegie stuff, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And once I made it all about them, they loved me. And people want to work with people they like. And the offers just kept coming and coming. It was absolutely fascinating. But too often people get stuck in this idea that I need to make it about the resume. I need to tell everyone I know, and I need to sit online and respond and react to all these, quote, job postings that I believe are real when, you know, you never know. Chances are good they're not real. And it's not like people are unintentionally or intentionally sending out unreal job postings, but you never know if they've already hired someone, if they had someone else in mind, and they had to do that just because the company line is you have to post it. You never know if their website person got laid off and nobody's updated the website for a year and a half. You know, you don't know these things. So it's a matter of getting out and networking and meeting people and connecting, and that's where the real opportunities are. But the other big thing is that too many people are so reactive. They've spent their life waiting for the phone call for the next job. So many times, if I had, you know, a dollar or a penny for every time I've heard, well, I've never had to look for a job. They always came to me. I'd be very wealthy. But the thing is, when a job always comes to you, you're always living your life reactively. You're never being proactive about what you really want to do. And so sometimes I believe that people really need to set a stake in the ground and realize you might be in the position you're in for a reason. So honor that reason and investigate it and really step back and say, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And make it the best part of your life the rest of your life.
You know, I like that. And that's definitely one of the parts here you mentioned in your subtitle of the book, Get Connected. And we've talked about that as well. Just because you're in a job or just because you're not having to look for one doesn't mean that you're connected and doing what you're here supposed to do.
Right.
And then when people lose that job, you know, you say, well, I'm okay for now, or I'm fine, or I don't need, but then when they lose that, then they have no idea where to go from there, and it's because they've never been connected. So you're even saying to people, even if you're in a job, get connected and connect with people as well, because you never know when you might be without it, or you never know when it's time to really switch into what you're supposed to do, right?
Right, and you never know. You're never going to have those opportunities to switch to the path that is the right path for you because you're never putting yourself in those circles.
Mm.
So you constantly have to be on the lookout. I often am humored by the people I sit next to on the airplane. You know, I feel a little sorry for the person who gets stuck next to me on a five-hour flight to New York because I have a captive audience, right? They're not going anywhere, poor them. But more times than not, we get off the flight and they say, boy, that was the best flight I've ever been on. Boy, I've never talked to someone for so long on an airplane. This is amazing. Boy, does this happen to you ever? I mean, this never happens to me. I'm thinking, well, it happens to me all the time. But it's more, I sit there and say, you know what? It's destiny that we're sitting next to each other. There's a reason that we're sitting next to each other. So let's figure out that reason. And maybe, I don't know if you've heard the phrase, or I'm sure you have, that you have friends for a reason, for a season, or for eternity.
Right.
And sometimes you're sitting next to someone for a reason, and sometimes you're sitting next to them for a season, and sometimes you're next to them because you're meant to be friends for eternity. And so as I approach each airplane flight with that mentality, I think, oh, my gosh, who do I get to sit next to tonight or today? And what can I learn about them? And I bet they're fascinating because everybody's fascinating. But it's amazing the connections that have been made, whether it's jobs or business, have been made as a result of me having that kind of opportunistic mindset that says, I'm being set an opportunity in front of me. I'm gonna leverage that opportunity. I'm not going to put some headphones on and shun it and not know what I missed out on.
You know, Molly, it's really interesting. That's why I really like the job whisperer title that I'm thinking you're coining, and I like it. I'm going to attribute it to you, unless you're going to tell me otherwise. But
someone called me that. I was in a meeting, one of our networking meetings. We have networking meetings throughout the country for executives who are working and executives who are out of work. And it oftentimes at the networking meetings for executives who are working, they'll go around the room and say who they are, what they're looking for, and how the group can help. And so many times someone will say what they do and what they're looking for, and I say, no. What you need to do is, and I'll tell them, and someone said, you're like the horse whisperer. You know how to tame the job seekers. I go, no, I'm the job whisperer. So that's where that phrase came from. I'm also a networking snob, so that's my two brands, the job whisperer and the networking snob. So.
Well, the thing is that so often people will say one thing but are actually screaming something else from inside their heart or inside their soul or something. And that's what you seem to pick up on. And that's why I think it's so interesting because all along, I'd say to you, you just don't seem like this corporate IBM person to me, and maybe I was looking at you for support in that, and of course you were saying the same thing to me, but you were doing what you were doing at the time, and that's why I think it's interesting. As I read some of the examples that you gave in the book, I thought, there's no way she couldn't have seen that back then, because it's who she was. Now, what was the process of discovering who you were in all this?
Well, sometimes you need to have a real, not tragedy, so to speak, but a real, something dramatic happen to you, right? And
right.
Because I love corporate America. I absolutely love corporate America. And after I left IBM, you know, I had my point in time where I said, I'm done here. I'm going to move on elsewhere. And I ran corporate marketing function for other technology companies. And I loved it. I really enjoyed doing it. And it was kind of one of those things I was born to do. It comes natural, and it's fun for me and easy, and I'm good at it. And then when I was laid off, by the way, nobody ever wants to hear your job search story, so you never want to dwell on that, so I'm going to move right on from there. But I found myself looking for a position, and it was right in the bust of the technology bust, and nobody was hiring VPs of marketing. In fact, more VPs of marketing were being let go every single day. And so I kept thinking, well, certainly, you know, somebody has to hire me. By process of elimination, at one point I have to be the last person left, and I'll get hired by that, right? Mm. And as it kept taking so long and so long, I kept thinking, but I loved it. I had a passion for running corporate marketing. And then one day, I was actually in Israel working on an archaeological dig. And it was something I'd never done before, so it wasn't even on my list, but I decided to check it off the list. And I had this pickaxe, and if you can imagine, they used to send me to the fresh dirt, because once they started digging into a hole, I'm not very graceful, and I don't have very good attention to detail. So I would pickaxe the ground, and I'd say, oh, look, I found some, you know, 50 pieces of pottery, which probably was one piece, like 5 seconds previously, right? So they kept sending me to the open space where the chances of me ruining some major relic was pretty minimal. And I'm standing all alone, you know, pickaxing like crazy into the ground, and I kept thinking, what do I love? What do I really want to do in life? And I said, you know what? I love networking. And it was like an epiphany. It was like God had come down and shone the light, and I hit the ground and went, I love, and the pickaxe hit the ground, the earth separated, networking. And it was very dramatic in my mind. I just remember it so blatantly. And I said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go home, and I'm going to build a business around networking, because I love it so much. And people need help with it, because, boy, I've met a lot of people, and they're not very good at networking. And so that's kind of what got me down the path. I never planned to write a book on job search. I never planned to build a business, a national organization of executives helping each other in the job search. That was never part of my plan. But sometimes God puts you in a place for a reason. As I looked back and said, 2 years, 3 days, why did I need to be out of work? Because it took me that long to figure out that this was what I was supposed to do in life. And sometimes, again, when people are sitting there struggling and saying, why can't I find a job? Why am I having so much challenge? Or why am I having so much challenge at work? Why are these people making my life miserable? Because you're not supposed to be there. Because someone is sending you a sign, but you're too close-minded to read the signs to say, there's something wrong here. And
we're not living in the moment, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. I want to remind everybody that you're listening to Filippo on Life Changes with Filippo, and you can learn more about us at www.lifechanges.ws. We're here every Monday night on the VBS Radio Network at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, or actually daylight time now at the moment. But learn more about us on our website. Come join us on our Facebook fan page. Keep the conversation going during the week. We enjoy connecting with all of you. We bring you people that have made changes in their lives, are out there changing people's lives, or out there changing the world in some way. And our guest today is Molly Wendell, who is doing all three with her new book, The New Job Search. Break all the rules, get connected, and get hired faster for the money you're worth. She is president and CEO of Executives Network, and that's executives with an S, network.com, if you want to learn more about her on the website. Of course, you can always go to lifechanges.ws, and you'll get to hear this interview and read about Molly on her page on our website. So we're back now with Molly Wendell, and Molly, we are not living in the moment, and it's interesting how your book talks about that. And going back to IBM, because I'm getting such a kick out of this for just a moment, you talked about sales school at IBM. Now, I happen to have done very well at sales school and was so surprised to read that you didn't do as well. I have to laugh. But you talk about, like, the coffee incident where you spilled coffee on yourself, and then you went into the interview, you were late, and you had coffee all over yourself, and you just bombed. You weren't in the moment. And the irony of it is, and the reason I bring this up, is because the Molly that I knew would have taken that and told the story of how I just tripped and spilled coffee on myself, and the persona would have just charmed the pants off of whoever you were standing in front of.
You know, you're right. You're right. I was not the authentic me, but I was young and not as smart, but it was funny because I remember wearing this dress, and I had a blazer over the dress, and there was a stairwell that I often took that stairwell because there were less people on it, and I'd have less chance running into someone because, you know, Grace is not my middle name. And so I remember taking that stairwell. I had a great bran muffin, too, and I tripped and fell. I was running so fast because I thought I'd be late, and I tripped and fell, spilled the whole cup of coffee all over my white dress, or cream-colored dress, by the way.
Mm.
I get upstairs and think, I am filthy. I cannot go into an interview. And it was a sales call. It was a mock sales call. And so I went to the class manager, the person head of class, and I said, look, can I change my interview time because I just spilled all over me and I need to go home and change? And they said, no, you can't. And I go, okay. So I went over to the bathroom, and I put the entire, as much of my dress in the sink as I could, and washed it off. So not only did I smell of coffee, I was soaking wet. And I wring the dress out and kind of smooth it as much as I possibly can and walk into the interview. I never had any coffee. I had so much adrenaline going, I guess I didn't need coffee anymore. I really missed that bran muffin. And I walk into the interview, and I kept thinking, should I tell him? Should I tell him? Because I really stink. I mean, I reek of coffee. He must think that I'm the biggest coffee addict ever to be born. And I was so nervous. I don't know why I didn't just say, hey, I'm so sorry I'm late. You'll never believe what just happened. Or perhaps you will, but let me just tell you. And I should have done that, but instead I didn't say a word. And what I really needed to show was that I was human. And instead I was so worried about putting on this persona of, I'm official. I can do this. I'm professional. I don't need to share my personal issues. And the reality is sometimes you do. Sometimes you just need to say, look, I messed up. I remember in the job search when I decided to go into a new industry, I knew two people in this new industry. And I made two phone calls. One of them I had actually fought against in a zoning hearing like 5 years previous. And I called him up and I said, hey, Buzz, it's Molly Rendell. Remember me? And he goes, how can I forget you? I go, that's great. I need your help. When can we meet? He goes, how about Tuesday? I'm like, okay, great. And he became a huge advocate of mine in the search. But it's funny how when you just kind of put yourself out there and say, hey, this is who I am, you know, you're the authentic you, people, you're going to attract the right people and repulse the wrong people, and it'll all work out. But yeah, I felt bad that I should, in hindsight, I should have said something, but I didn't, and that's when not being authentic gets in the way.
And not being in the moment. And you know, it's interesting. You said two things. You said you were young and you were not smart. And you know what? I disagree on both of those because A, you're still young, and B, you were smart and you are smart. But what you were doing, you were so smart that you were taking everything that was taught you and you were doing everything exactly like you were being told to do, which was
right.
Going against who you are or who you were. And this is the thing that I had issue with during those sales trainings as well, is because they did, because I fell into this. Somehow I still did well, but I didn't, but I also fell into not being who I was. And IBM or any company can get more out of people if they allow people to be who they really are. And that's a learning on the corporate side. But what you're sharing on this side is that if we can be who we really are, especially in this market, then that's the person companies are looking for these days, right?
Yeah, and you're going to find the right opportunity. Here's an interesting story. My friend Rick, he had interviewed for a chief information officer for an insurance firm, very large insurance firm, and he didn't get the job. And he said, he went and asked them, what could I have done differently? And I hate when people go back and try and ask the company, you know, basically, sour grapes, why didn't you hire me? And they always say, no, I'm just trying to learn to do things differently next time. But my point is, you can't do things differently next time because you're who you are. And if you just be who you are, then you're going to land in the right opportunity. And if you try and change yourself because of some feedback that says, well, you know, you should have worn this or you should have done this because that's what the person who got hired did, maybe you're not the right fit for the company. Maybe you're not the right fit for the position. So too many times people are so worried about the feedback of what could I do differently? How could I be different? And the point is, don't. Be yourself. Be who you are. But also, be very careful about telling too much of your story and too much of who you are, because one of the things I teach about in the book is the key to landing the right job is getting them to talk and you not talking at all. The more you ask the questions, the more they talk, the more they want to hire you, and then it becomes your decision. And that's where you pick the team. Too often people think that they're being interviewed, but they forget that they're interviewing as well. It's a two-way street. So if you're interviewing them just as much as they're interviewing you. You can't set that aside. You need to really focus on that and say, is this the company I want to work for? So anyway, at any rate, the guy who, Rick, who didn't get the job as the CIO, turns out about 2 months later, he landed this incredible job, way better than that previous job. And the point was, you weren't supposed to get the job. You did what you did, and it was exactly how it was supposed to be because you were really supposed to get this job. So the people, they're short-sighted, and I get that. I get that because when you're looking, you just want to land, and especially if you've been in a longer-than-expected job search, it's really frustrating, and it gets really tiring, and it's exhausting. You're like, what's wrong with me? Why won't someone hire me? And I'm here to tell you that it's not that they won't hire you. It's that you have a different purpose. You have there's a different plan for you. So make sure you're in the right spaces so you can be part of your plan. You know, don't hole up in your house because you think that nobody will hire you. It's happening for a reason. And again, you have to remember that and have that feed you every morning that there's a reason. Is today the reason? I don't know. But maybe not. Who knows? But it's okay. You know, always have that positive attitude to know that the right opportunity is right around the corner. You're just not sure which corner.
And Molly, that's so true for life. And job search is just another aspect of life because people ask these questions all the time. Why am I still single? Why do I not have the house that I want yet? Why do I not still have a child? Or why, you know, so that keeps coming up all over the place. And why do I not have the job that I want? And you're saying a lot of things in this book. And not only are you saying, you know, there's a time and a place and, you know, find the space. But also that I have to keep going back to that connecting, because when you connect, how do you put it? I put it with your higher self or higher purpose or what have you, and then with other people, then you've really got all your bases covered, right?
Absolutely. You'll be amazed. The networks, you might assess where you're at right now, and Filippo, I know that you've experienced this. The people you interact with 10 years ago versus the different conversations you're having today with your network and the people you're meeting. If you're consciously aware of the people you're meeting and you're building those connections, it's truly amazing the levels and the leaps and bounds you make in your network and in the opportunities that come forward to you.
Absolutely. And lest we forget, we are actually living at each moment during that job search or during that discovery process or that that networking process, whatever. This is part of our living, and if we approach that with a depressed state or an angry state or a frustrated state, then we are currently living our existence in that space. And who wants to live there, and who is attracted to that?
Right. As an interesting story, I was making a few phone calls to some of our members, some of the clients and people who come to the meetings, just checking in, seeing what they're doing. I hadn't seen them in a while, and I was wondering if they landed or if they're still on the job hunt. And it was interesting how people answered the phone. And the people who answered the phone, and I don't know if it's the chicken or the egg or the egg or the chicken kind of situation, but there were some people who would answer the phone and they'd say, hello, and real curt, real not friendly. And I'm like, oh, hey, it's Molly Wendell with Executives Network. I just want to check in with you. I hadn't heard from you in a while and just want to see where you're at. And are you still looking? Yeah, I am. Okay. Well, you know, what can I do to help? Where are you targeting? You know, what contacts can I connect you with? These kind of things. Yet the people who I called who answered the phone, hello, this is Mike, or this is Sally, you know, in a real positive, upbeat voice with obvious smile on their face, I said, hey, I'm just checking in, seeing how you're doing. And they said, you know what? I have 3 interviews next week. You know, I haven't landed, but I feel like I'm close. Mm. And so part of me was saying, well, are they optimistic because they feel like they're close, or are they close because they're optimistic?
Mm.
And the people who are the Debbie Downers, they're not close. And you know what? They're never going to be close until they put their game face on and be positive and exciting and happy. And, you know, fake it till you make it. Sometimes it's like that little kid show. I can't even remember that, you know, put your smiley face on. And but you have to every day because life's tough. And the thing is, everyone has tough times. And so it's how you deal with it, how you react, how you respond, how you deal with those situations that bring you more opportunities. Because if you can't handle this, well, you can't handle much, you know?
Right. You can't, might not be able to handle the job stresses, right?
If that's what right. Right. But right. That whole attitude of being, you know, positive and exciting and answering the phone with that feeling of promise that, you know what, the next call might be mine. Just that optimism, that will go a long way in feeding that the next call might be yours, or the next job might be yours.
Well, you know, and of course it's hard. There are so many things in life that are hard, and this is one of the hardest, and can be one of the most joyful and as well. And that's what you're trying to help, and easy and quick and all that stuff. You're trying to help people with that. And so you're helping people be prepared beforehand. You're helping people during. And I know that you connect and network with them afterwards. And so you have formed executivenetwork.com. And it sounds really clever. It's peer networking for executives, which I don't think existed before, and I know executives have felt like they're alone in this. You know, now they're in some cases out in the job market, and if they don't land a job right away, it's like, how do you get a job when you're so high up? And yet right. You're bringing them together and helping them, which is so needed, because sometimes when they're at that level, they're so disconnected with who they are. So in the couple minutes that we have left, what can you share with us about that?
Well, I was going to mention, I mean, we have networking groups for executives who are in the job search, but we also have a networking groups for executives who are working, because sometimes they're very disconnected. And in fact, they're often very disconnected because they're never preparing themselves for the next opportunity, whether it's a job, whether it's a business partnership, whether it's a new client. They're not thinking that way of the better my network, the better off I will be and my company will be. So we have networking groups for both working executives as well as not working executives. And I would also suggest people, if they're interested, they can go. I have a fan page on Facebook. It's called The New Job Search. Become a fan. And I'm working on another book, actually, on networking, because I'm the networking snob. And I worry about all the little things that, that people don't do that are getting in their way of being a very effective networker to really build relationships. And it's all about relationships. If you want to get anything done, it's going to come down to relationships, people helping people. And the more relationships you have that are deep and meaningful, the better off, the more you can get done, whether it's for you or for others. And but it has to start somewhere. So I kind of help guide people through a method of starting somewhere and getting deeper, and helping them connect and build and leverage and share influential relationships.
Well, the Molly method, that's what I think another book should be called. And you have so much to offer. You always have. And you are just giving, and you give of your time, you give of your energy, you give of your knowledge, and it keeps you busy. And I know you spend a lot of time with family, and so I know that for you to take time to be on the radio right now in particular is a really busy time for you. And if I might say, because in a couple weeks you are going to be doing something really special, right?
Yes. In a week and a half, I am getting married. So, very excited for the first time. It's very exciting for the first and only time. How about that? So
very exciting
it is
indeed.
A little busy.
Having been around people, especially ladies who have gotten married, I know what this time can be. So the fact that you're still heavily engaged with the executives network and pursuing the publicity on the book and being on radio with me, you've got all that else going on. So it's a very exciting time for you.
The other thing you need to remember for everybody out there is I met him through networking. So, there's another reason why networking helps create those opportunities that can change your life, right?
Absolutely. Molly, you are just a delight, and I'm so happy that we're friends, and now that we're connected again, I look forward to being even closer connected in the near future here, once you get back from your honeymoon and after you've had a great time. So we've been talking to Molly Wendell, an author whose book is The New Job Search, Break All the Rules, Get Connected, and Get Hired Faster for the Money You're Worth. She is the president and CEO of ExecutivesNetwork.com, ExecutivesNetwork.com. And Molly, where can we get the book?
The book's available on Amazon or MollyWendell.com. Amazon or MollyWendell.com.
All
and
right.
That's
and
Wendell, W-E-N-D-E-L-L.
I'm glad you spelled that. And if you forget the spelling or if you don't remember any of that, you'll find it all at lifechanges.ws. Molly, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I look forward to connecting after the happy day and hearing all about it.
Me too. Thanks so much.
All right. Best luck to you and congratulations.
Okay.
Thank you for being on with us. This has been exciting. Again, our guest has been Molly Wendell, and The New Job Search is the book. And that is so what Life Changes is all about, helping bridge the gap between what's happening in our lives today and still connecting with where we're headed, whether that be spiritual or whether that be new jobs. It's all part of our life. And so with how to be the best that we could be and be the change we wish to see in the world, we still haven't figured out the exact title. But there's a segment coming right up with Dorothy Lee Donahue. Dorothy, are you with us?
I sure am.
Okay, very good. Please share with us what you've got for us today.
Okay. Over 25 years ago, when I discovered that I was and am the power in my world, I learned about and used the universal law of the power of attraction long before it became the secret. I manifested a perfect job, Philippa, with a great paycheck, and with me being my own boss. It was awesome. However, 8 years later, I crashed and burned because I had failed to stay out of the company gossip, and I allowed my thoughts, my words, and my actions to co-create a situation where my company was no longer in business. So manifesting and getting the perfect job is just the first step. However, maintaining the perfection is an everyday attitude process. Our attitude is made up of our thoughts, our feelings, our beliefs, our words, and our actions. and we must be vigilant in knowing what we are thinking, feeling, believing, doing, and saying on a daily basis in order to maintain the kind of working relationships we deserve and want to have. As a spiritual life coach, I get quite a few clients talking to me about their three-dimensional jobs and what is wrong with them. After listening to all of the negatives, I ask them to list the positives. I want to share with you tonight one of these stories. This beautiful, spiritual, intelligent, and very funny young lady came to me saying that she hated her job. However, after questioning her, we discovered that she hated her boss and actually loved her job. I asked her what was wrong with him, and she said that everything was wrong. She described how everyone was jolly and happy at work until the moment that the boss walked in. Then she said, everything changed. He walked directly to his desk without greeting anyone. He had a very sour look on his face, and his attitude just sucked. So no one laughed after he came in. No one smiled because he was so mean. And when I asked what exactly he did that was so mean, she had to think very hard, and then all she could come up with that he was just grumpy and never smiled. I asked her what she knew about his personal life, and she said absolutely nothing, even after working with him for about 6 months. However, she knew everything about everyone else in the office, and they were her extended family, and she loved them all. I then asked her how the office was doing as far as being a moneymaker or were their numbers falling since he had come on board. She looked shocked by the question and then said that the office was more profitable than ever before, and that as far as work goes, the boss knows what he's doing. Finally, I asked her if she knew that attitudes are very contagious, and that just maybe the office staff had infected him with their bad attitudes. I asked her, what do you think he feels when he walks through that door and everyone stops chatting and smiling and laughing? And what if he's painfully shy and had been told by his boss that your previous boss had been so loved and respected and that it would be a hard act for your new boss to follow? Or maybe he just doesn't know how to act when he walks into a room full of people who immediately shut down the very moment he opens the door. She got very quiet and promised to have a different attitude on the following Monday. When she got to work, she called an unofficial meeting with the office staff and asked them to join with her in an experiment. She asked them to adopt a more positive attitude and see if attitudes are really infectious. She had baked some muffins for her friends at work, which she always did on Mondays, but this time she set aside two for the boss, which was something she'd never done before. She made sure the coffee pot was full rather than empty, and when he walked in, she smiled and said very cheerfully, "Good morning. I trust your weekend was fun-filled." Her coworkers also smiled and said good morning. He appeared bewildered and went to his office and found the muffins, hot coffee, and the morning newspaper waiting for him. And at noon, when the office staff was still happy and they were talking about going to lunch or having something brought in, she asked if he'd like to join them. He was stunned, and he asked her to come in, close the door, and sit down. She smiled and chose to be curious about whatever he had to say instead of choosing to shut down and be on the defensive. And the boss asked her very seriously, why is the staff so happy? Why were they being so nice to him? Had they heard a rumor? Was he going to be replaced? He was quite upset because the office behavior had done a 180-degree turn over the weekend, and he just didn't understand what was going on. He was really afraid he was going to be fired because everyone was just too happy. When she explained that she was doing an experiment, she was truly sorry for the lack of warmth and respect in the past and that she and the others wanted to acknowledge him for making the office more profitable than ever before and that they thought that if they changed their attitudes, he might just change his. He broke down and he cried, and he said that the hardest job he had ever had in his life was the one of walking through that door every day, knowing that the staff so thoroughly disliked him. He had indeed been warned that the previous boss was a hard act to follow, but he hadn't expected the staff to completely shut him out, as they'd been doing. He thanked her for the experiment and asked if she'd continue it, and she said yes. The next day, he took everyone to lunch and shared a little of himself with them. And now, years later, he is a part of her extended family, and they all celebrate holidays together. As Winston Churchill once said, attitude is a little thing that makes a big difference. So now, with the challenges with our economy, it's more important than ever to take a look at our attitudes. They can indeed make us or break us. They are truly infectious, so please make sure that your attitude is worth catching. And until next week, please remember that you are the power in your world. You are the guru you've been waiting and looking for. You are the only one who can end your suffering, and you can only do this by beginning a love affair with yourself. Choose to become a very conscious co-creator by making truly elegant choices, and never forget that you are powerful beyond measure and that you are love. You are lovable, and you are indeed loved. Thank you.
Thank you, Dorothy Lee Donahue. That was a beautiful story, and there's a lot to learn there, and it ties in so nicely with our guest today, Molly Wendell, and we want to thank her again for being on the show with us. We have another exciting guest for you next week, and I think we're keeping it a surprise, but we'll share that on the website at www.lifechanges.ws, and, of course, on Facebook if you're on our fan page or on one of our personal pages. So remember, you can keep the conversation going, and we'll do our best to do the same throughout the week. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles. And to learn more about them, visit our sponsor page on our website and click on their links. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and it has been my pleasure being of service by hosting Life Changes with Filippo this whole past year and during this first show of the new year. I want to thank Dorothy Lee Donahue and Mark Leger as producers and segment hosts for their efforts all year and for all the promise of this year together. I thank also our engineer Seth and our BBS station manager Don Newson and our video and social networking guru guide Ken Sheets of Buzz Bros for all that we all are doing together. We are certainly a big, happy family and growing. So many people I'm already wanting to thank for next year because they've already joined on board, but kind of closing out the year, and I think that's a good way to do it. And if you haven't seen our videos up on YouTube, go to our website and see the link there, and you'll see what the Buzz Bros has been doing for us and with us. It's quite exciting. And last but not least, I want to thank you all for being a part of this show all last year and here on our first show of next year, and for being part of the change that we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes. Join us here every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And visit us on the web at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. And follow our community on Facebook at Life Changes with Filippo. Join us here next week as we consciously embrace and explore the only constant, life changes.